today. You brushed your teeth. You skipped the floss. You combed your hair. You took the train. You did the crossword. You missed 22 across. You went to work. You had a meeting. You ate your lunch. You had another meeting. You wondered, how is anyone supposed to get any work done around here with so many meetings? You left the office. You took the train. You ate your dinner. You brushed your teeth. You did all the things that one normally does the day before a brutal EF5 tornado rips through town, leaving 30,000 people without power. You never know when the day before is the day before. Prepare for tomorrow at ready.gov/today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
836 at WEOL. I played that, Craig, because we run that on our radio station, one of those announcements. And I like, there's a little humor sort of involved in that particular piece. And it makes kind of people think about their day as just a regular day as it normally is until something happens, and then they have to see whether they're prepared. And the idea, obviously, is to have some preparedness ahead of time. And joining us to talk a little bit about that in the recent 10 days or so, this whole month of January 2014, we have Tom Kelly from the Emergency Management Agency and Homeland Security. And thank you for coming in today.
You're welcome.
It's 43 degrees.
I came in without a coat on. It was unbelievable.
You know, we've had just about everything, right, over 10 days?
We call it this is the month of job security so far. It's been pretty busy.
May we call you the master of disaster?
No, because they do that already.
Oh, okay.
But that's all right. You can do that today.
I want that.
Well, but good screen name for my Facebook account or something like that.
There were so many different things that were happening, and I guess depending on where you are is what affected you, whether it was no water or no gas.
Correct.
Or just really tough cold. Let's talk about last week this whole year so far in the month of January. What kind of things did you kind of foresee or, you know, get ready for during this time?
Well, the gas emergency we knew about late Sunday night. Columbia Gas had contacted us and said, there's a possibility we have a major outage here in the county. At first we thought it was the majority of just Elyria down in the southwest corner, the Walmart corner we call it. And after that, about an hour and a half later, it grew into majority of the south end of North Ridgeville and northern half of North Eaton Township. So at the end, they figured out they had about 2,800 plus customers out of gas, and it was about 2.5 days total.
And when something like that starts, is it from the customer standpoint, or does somebody at the utility suddenly realize there's an issue?
I mean, they have pressure monitoring. They knew there was a problem. Of course, when we first got the call, we drove through the area, and I saw two or three heating companies driving around, and we stopped the people and said, hey, Joe, there's a gas problem. He goes, no, I didn't. I know. I'm getting all these calls. But the pressure had dropped, and it was a domino effect. You know, closer to the supply end was the first to go. And then the pressure dropped, like we talked earlier, the fingers, it gets to the end of the line. People had gas and still heat in 6 or 7 hours into it, and then it finally drained down to the pressure that the systems wouldn't operate.
Was it because there was such a drain on the system?
All I've heard so far is we haven't had a lessons learned, which we usually do afterwards, that there was a utility issues from the supplier. And I don't know if there was a volume problem or a pressure problem or what, but there was something that they get from the company. Columbia gets their gas from, supposedly.
And so that was an issue for people. And of course, it came at a time when the weather was being, you know, giving us this kind of, not in a, you know, decades time we've seen this temperature. And I don't know whether it even got as cold as it had been. And for some reason, you know, they talked about it was like cold in the 90s or whatever. But for some reason, this particular one.
Right. It was at our office, which is on Gateway Boulevard here in Elyria. We had during the Monday night time frame, it was 14 below. We had a 42 degree below wind chill factor that was measured on our equipment there.
How did your equipment hold up? I mean,
it didn't freeze. Luckily, we didn't have any moisture that would freeze our rain gauge, but it worked fine as far as I know. It keeps a track of the highs and lows each day.
What happens in your office when you have some sort of disaster like this?
Well, that level, for both instances. We have the county's emergency operations center, which is a war room that's in the lower level there. And we cranked that up once we saw the size of the gas issue. You've probably seen movies where the emergency management person, the volcano with Tommy Lee Jones and things like that, where he's in charge and running around putting fires on, things like that. That doesn't happen. Hollywood hype. But it's a resource and coordinating agency or office that anybody on the outside to start needing issues or equipment or resources that they can't provide on the local level, we start doing that. So we were working closely with Columbia Gas, lining up in case we worked with the mayor and the city of Elyria, the heat shelter that was opened up at St. Mary's Church, which the father opened up there. It was originally open for people we thought were going to need shelter at night, like the homeless people. We still have a few around here in Elyria. But then it ramped up to being a warming shelter for people who had no gas.
Did people use it?
I believe at the maximum time we had about 6 people that were in there. The homes got down, from what we heard, maybe to 50 degrees in the time frame that happened. So it wasn't too bad, but if it would have gone another day or two, we'd have real problems. We did have a lot of businesses in the Walmart area there that had broken pipes that were closed over the weekend or after night, and then when it got so cold, they're not insulated, obviously, as well as the homes are in the ceilings, and some of the fire lines broke.
And, we talked about how if a disaster happens in certain areas, so I'm thinking, I can see the people. I feel sorry for the people that don't have gas. And then all of a sudden I get word that I'm not going to have water. It's interesting how this was kind of spread around. I don't know, maybe there were some people that had the double, whammy. You got everything.
There was, definitely. Problem was that, we had our emergency operations center staff, and we were in there about 26 hours, I think, for the gas issue. Sent them home about 7 o'clock in the morning and said, thanks for your time, and we appreciate the work you did. And then 5 o'clock again that same day, they were back in. But and it's very rare for us to have two large-scale emergencies double over each other, where we were working two issues there for about 12 hours until the gas thing started going away and then the water ramped up.
So you had the water where, and exactly what was the water intake from Avon Lake, was parts of it were frozen, so there's not as much water coming in, and then basically it's drying up. What's going to happen to the system if you start losing all that water?
Well, there's some type of phenomenon in the Great Lakes of fresh water when it gets so cold and the right amount of wind and fresh water that the ice, and I'm paraphrasing here, becomes a slurry. And once it got into intakes, which there are two of them on the Avon Lake system, they both plugged. And it's like a rock in there, and it couldn't bring the water in. So, that system not only does the city of Avon Lake, but all the way down that Route 83 corridor, North Ridgeville, Eaton Township, Columbia Township, and also into Medina, majority of Medina County, and farther south in other counties too.
Off Cleveland, I see something kind of big and square in the lake. And is that an intake?
The Crib, yes. It's like, I believe it's 5 miles out. But, it's one of the city of Cleveland's water intakes. Now, but obviously, they take a lot more water in than Avon Lake does. But it's the same situation, right?
So, where does the water, where are the actual intakes then for Avon Lake? Is it by shore? Is it farther out?
There are two. One is 1,800 feet out, and the other is 2,200 feet out. And they're, I believe, about 25 feet down. So the ice was down that far. Jammed up. The wind and the cold we had too also jammed all the ice up on the south shore. It was quite a mess there. It was all piled up. It wasn't just flat like a sheet of ice. It was piled up like mountains of ice.
So if you're boating out, not that you'd be boating now, but if you're boating out there in the summertime, would you actually see this thing?
I guess if the water was clear enough, you could probably see down, but I don't believe you can in Lake Erie. But it's cleaned up a lot in the last years, but I don't think you can see down that far.
So we had the lack of water, and when they tell you conserve water or don't use water, suddenly you think, I need to use water. You know what I mean? It's if they take it away from you, you suddenly think, I'm thirsty. I need to flush a toilet. I need to
exactly.
do something else.
There wasn't a bottle of water anywhere that we could find. We checked all the retailers on that end of the county, and everyone was empty.
I'm wondering what's going on in West Virginia right now. This is where they've got a chemical spill, I guess, of some kind of methyl cyclohexane. Saying you're probably familiar with whatever
methyl ethyl we just call it, because you never can figure those names out. But they have a major issue. What we had here was, but I don't want to use a pun here, but it was a drop in the bucket. They have a major issue, and from watching the news this morning before I left the house, it's not looking like it's going to clear up anytime soon.
And they just have to sort of get it diluted, or, is it one of those?
It's just got to run its course and flush itself out, right? And I'm going to have to do all the water lines and things like that. And probably every building, too, would have to be flushed out because it's already up into the system.
And I suppose that's a balance that we take by having these chemicals being transported or housed or moved through. And here in Elyria, you know, there's talk about the things that pass through here that we never right. know about, but you probably are somewhat aware so that you have some contingency plan for case.
You have a major rail thoroughfare just north of here on the railroad tracks, just north of the building here. There's thousands of shipments a day that go through here, hazardous materials right through the center of Elyria.
And you can see that if it gets loose like that, what it can do to our water supply
Correct.
As well. So I guess they have probably many people getting involved with what's going on there. Not only their local emergency, but national, they get as and many you know, people coming into there.
You may have heard the disaster declaration that they're having, and then there's a federal disaster declaration. We did that here as a contingency because of the, in case we needed resources from the state level, like hauling water in for people, which they're doing in West Virginia. That capability was already in place, even though we didn't need it. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through once you go to a disaster declaration and ask for state help. So that mountain that we have to go through paperwork to get things going was already out of the way. So in case we needed it and water would have been off for a while, we had it.
We're talking with Tom Kelly, the Director of Emergency Management Agency and Homeland Security in Lorain County. I wanted to mention briefly a little bit about, you had some snow emergencies. Usually the sheriffs or somebody's involved with that. What determines those type of emergencies?
The sheriff does. He has okay. the almighty power. He can declare a level 1, 2, or 3 snow emergency. Level 1, which is usually done around here and just basically tells people, if you don't have to travel, stay home. It's easier for the plows to clean the roads and less accidents, that type of thing. Level 3, when you get up that high, and you would probably only see that here under a very, very dire emergency. The sheriff would probably never do that unless it was absolutely necessary. And that means if you don't drive, don't. If you do, we will ticket you.
It says like emergency vehicles only.
Correct.
Now, this happened right. in your, like the counties adjacent to us that they were going
I understand through. They did that. It was odd because the snow line and the ice line was just to our west. We had little snow, and Cedar Point and Toledo and those areas had a foot and a half of snow. And it was a lot worse there than it was here.
Is it mainly because a lot of the areas have more stretches of open roadways, maybe more rural, that make it more difficult than it was the cities and things like that?
I wish I knew, because Lorain County is, I believe, still the leader of the number of tornadoes in the last 100 years. And why is that? We don't know.
Yeah, right.
It's just luck of the draw, or the way the land lays or whatever. I'm not sure.
What are we dealing with right now? I've seen a lot of the issues with when the snow's melting, you get these ice jams now, and that's causing some of the I've seen some nearby creeks and ditches a little bit up close to the level of.
I really thought we were going to go for the three-peat this week with the flooding, but the Black River came within about a half a foot of reaching flood stage, but it never went to it. So we were lucky, but a lot of the Rocky River I see and the Chagrin River were both having problems.
If Bruce were to ask over the years, what the most, dramatic disaster you've been a part of or covered, what would it be?
Probably here in Elyria, and it was in, I believe it's 94, August 28th.
Greg, you know what
you know what I'm going to say. I probably was, and that was the Aztec Catalyst Company right. explosion right. where we evacuated about 8,000 people out of the city of Elyria, and there were two explosions that night, and I was standing about 1,000 foot from the second one. So that sort of sticks in my mind,
right.
but that was probably the biggest.
I was here, and our reporter John Hughes was over there, and he was nearby, too, when the second one hit.
Well, if I remember the story that he told, and if this is the one, if I'm correct, because the first explosion occurred, and then that kind of like brought media people out there or whatever, and then it was like sort of under control a little bit, or at least that they were able to get there. And he said he was backing out of the parking lot after he had kind of got tape and whatever, coming back to the station. And that's when the second explosion took place, and they realized this is going to be a bigger story than it.
I had a television cameraman standing next to me. We had moved west down the street. They were going to set up a command post away from the incident. And when the second explosion hit, and there was a piece of something that went over our heads, we could hear it go by. And he looked at me and says, "I'm not dying in the city of Elyria," and pulled through his stuff in his car and drove off. And I never saw him again.
Well, and you had a lot of those people evacuated to the college.
Right. We had we usually plan for 30% if we do an evacuation. And we had about 3,000 people show up at the college. We had an overflow at Windsor School, which is just down the street. But it was odd. We have a disaster animal crew now. That after Katrina, we were asked to put those things into place. But I remember that day going up to community college, and there were horses tied to trees outside. The people that lived out in the more rural areas like Murray Ridge had taken their farm animals with them. and tied them up in the yards at the college.
Now, that was some 20 years ago, and that was before the Homeland Security part was added to what you had. Was it still the Emergency Management Agency, or was there some other just agency that was not as...
We're like the third level now, or fourth level. It used to be disaster services and civil defense and those type of things, but yes, there was in place. Prior to 86, it was all volunteer, but Ronald Reagan, when he was president, designated that there be a county agency across the country, and each county in the state and in the country has one. Some cities, too.
Well, that's good. Well, obviously, we I don't know whether we need it more because we have it, that we use it, or it's just that, you know, it seems maybe with the populations, and who knows, more things are affecting more people. I don't know if that's happening or not.
People just probably more aware. We hear more reports from things that we normally wouldn't have heard of 20 years ago.
So. Yeah, and it allows it. And, of course, the whole thing is preparedness, too, so it offers people a chance to kind of be prepared. And I guess if we've gone through this month of January, we've kind of survived enough of these things, and we can kind of figure out what kind of preparedness we need for coming up. What's the springtime? You're going to make me talk about springtime now.
Groundhog Day is only what? How many weeks away?
Three weeks away from
yesterday.
And Phil will talk about spring, and then we'll have to deal with what is pretty much the thunderstorms and all that kind of a thing, and tornado activity. That
severe weather season starts March 15th.
He knew that.
Right now, it looks like we're beginning to have two severe weather seasons. We have some bad weather in November when the seasons are just the opposite, and the cold and the hotter air are mixing. We've had some of our worst storms in the fall compared to the spring.
Tom, what should people have in their cars, and what should they have in their home?
Well, I hope after everybody saw that we had no water that the first thing you should think about is bottled water. You can buy that, gallon jugs anywhere, 1 gallon per person per day. And I hope they understand now why we preach that they need to have it in place, because obviously it wasn't available. In the home, that first aid kit, always have some cash on hand. You know, if the power's out, no ATM. Debit cards don't work when the power's out. Just first aid supplies and things like that. Water's the basic thing now. And same thing in your car. I know it's kind of hard to carry water in your car in the wintertime, but blankets especially. You never know where you're going to get stranded. We had the white hurricane here in the 70s, late 70s, 77, 78 around that time. We had people die in frozen cars because they were stranded. Keep yourself warm.
And keep that cell phone charged if you have.
Exactly. Best thing to do, they sell these new things now that are like a little battery pack that you can plug into your phone. It'll charge your phone again. That's a good thing. They're very, very inexpensive. We just bought 4 of them for the office for our phones, just in case we're out in the middle of nowhere and can't charge our phones. And it'll do it in like a half hour. A very, very good item to have.
It keeps people in contact, and that's the key a lot of times. Communication, if that's interrupted, that creates another issue. That's
our number one problem during emergencies, communications.
Our guest today, Tom Kelly, the Emergency Management Agency and Homeland Security Director. Thanks for stopping in this morning, and hopefully this week will be kind of, you know, clean things up, put things back in order.
It'll be catch-up week this week.
Those manuals that you brought out. You got a G for gas, W for water. You got to put them all back to make sure they're all set for the next time you need it. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It.